Armchair Directors, where each episode we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show, we are looking at director Terrence Malick and his 2012 film, To the Wonder. Returning on the show today to talk about To the Wonder is Professor Marie Westhaver. Professor Westhaver, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
Okay, we'll stop there because I know people are like, I can't hear what's going on. They're whispering.
Don't adjust
but
your
it's
dial.
It's a Terrence Malick film. There's a lot. Everybody whispers. So the first, if people couldn't hear what the introduction was, we're talking about To the Wonder, a Terrence Malick film from 2012. And one of the first things I have in my notes is, huh? Because have you ever seen the movie Walk Hard?
No.
The Dewey Cox movie. It's like a parody of like the Walk the Line and the Ray Charles, but you know, it's kind of parodying all these famous recording artists. And like he's like this famous like country music artist, and he turns into a rock star. He goes through all these phases. So in one phase, he's becoming like Bob Dylan. And so he's like, you know, he's singing the Bob Dylan, and he's like, you know, talking like the random gibberish that Bob Dylan says in his songs. And like, one of his band members is like, what the heck is he singing about? And the other guy's like, you got me. This makes no sense to me. And the third guy goes, you guys are both idiots. This song is very deep. And this is kind of what it feels like with Terrence Malick. Everybody is like, there's a bunch of people like, I don't get it. But there's always somebody's going, you guys are idiots. This movie is very deep. And I don't think this movie is as deep as I'm one of the people like, I don't get it.
I will say that is a really good analogy because Bob Dylan is kind of like Terrence Malick in that he writes these amazing, I think he's a genius, he writes these amazing poetic words that don't say what you think they're saying. It's just very intellectual and highbrow and a little bit pompous.
Yeah, and this hits all the check marks for Terrence Malick film. I actually had a little thing like, okay, it's a Terrence Malick film, so there's going to be a lot of whispering narration. Check. There's going to be what I call nature porn shots. Mm-hmm. A lot of shots of, you know, animals, wildlife, trees, water. Check. There's going to be there's going to be this couple that's in love. And how does Terrence Malick show people in love? Them touching each other's faces. And there's a lot of that in this movie. There's another thing I'll get into later. But yeah, it hit every, like, I was like, yeah, this is a Terrence Malick film. This
and
is like
the
textbook.
Requisite beach scene, you know, the mm-hmm. lapping, you know, representing the sands of time and, mm-hmm. and all those deep things. Yes. Yeah, he does check a lot of boxes. But you know one thing I really liked about the movie, but this is just a personal thing, is that I love Mont Saint-Michel. To have it, you know, to set it there at first, that's where they go. And that's such a cool place if you've ever been, because you have to get there before the tide comes in. And when the tide does come in, you're completely surrounded by water.
Yeah, and this movie, I didn't hate this movie. Like, when we talked the last time about Wonder Wheel, I think this movie's a lot better than Wonder Wheel, because I can't sit through Wonder Wheel. But there's definitely the cinematography, which is by Emmanuel Lubezki, who did Gravity, Birdman, and The Revenant, which he won 3 times in a row.
Mm-hmm.
It's just absolutely beautiful. Like you said, that part where the tide comes in, almost every mm-hmm. shot in this film is beautiful. And
beautiful.
Like, that's... Even if you don't like a Terrence Malick movie, every one of his films are beautifully shot. I mean, he knows how to just, you know, he knows cinematography.
Hallmark cards writ large. Mm-hmm. Beautiful scenes.
So even though I was like, okay, yet another scene when they're frolicking and they're, you know, running around and everything, but it's still beautiful to look at just because, you know, the way he uses the light coming in with the sunlight. The way how I believe that little town they're living in is right next to the ocean or the Gulf of Mexico. I mean, just everything is just like you said, with the tides coming in, so they're on the beach and the water is right next to them when they're at that church or cathedral thing in France. Just everything is really gorgeous to look at.
Really, really gorgeous to look at. But you know, there's no script used during the filming.
Really?
Yes. He would just give the actors pages of thoughts and independent lines every morning and then ask them to play the emotions without speaking, just with their body. So it does have that feeling of being just sort of drifting.
Yeah, it doesn't really, that's the thing, it doesn't really feel like it's reality. It just feels like it's a dream. The way that there's hardly any actual dialogue in the film. There's no scenes where people are having conversations. And if there are scenes with people having conversations, they talk, they blurt out like one or two lines. And it's like, enough of that scene, onto this scene.
Yes, there's so much to pack in there. Apparently, Malick overshoots everything. So people who have been in his movies, you know, are very careful to say, well, you know, if I'm going to take the time to come down and shoot these scenes, you can't cut me. But he does. There's actually a whole bunch of people who were shot in this film who are not in it. Rachel Weisz, Jessica Chastain, Michael Sheen, Amanda Peet, and Michael Shannon. I mean, all these people had roles in this movie. They were shot, and then they were ended up on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, a lot of this film, that's one of the bigger, also huge complaints, is a lot of this film feels edited out. I mean, I feel like you said, like there's all these characters in the film that you don't even see, that all these people appear, and they don't even have one scene in the film. And like there's another character who just randomly shows up. It's, remember, Olga Kurylenko is like going through troubles with her marriage with Affleck, and there's this random Italian woman she runs into. And I'm like, who the heck is this woman? Mm-hmm. We've never seen, we're halfway through the film, and this is the first time we've ever heard of her. And then she's randomly showing up, and she's like, you got to be free. You got to be blah, 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 blah. You know, run more in the fields. But
frolic.
It does seem like there's something that was edited out with her character. Like there's got to be a scene where they meet or have a friendship or something. And it's just like, nope, here she is in this one scene, and you're never going to see her again. And the same thing with Rachel McAdams. She shows up, she's this old flame with Ben Affleck, and they reconnect once Olga Kurylenko leaves, her visa expires. But then they fall out, he goes back with Kurylenko, you never see Rachel McAdams again. And you're like, well, what was the point of having her in the film in the first place? She didn't really add that much.
That was to show the road not taken, I think. Because the whole time you're watching him with her, you're thinking, you know, this is what actually makes sense. You didn't have to go all the way to France to find this woman who it's not going to work out. You could have just stayed home, and it would have worked out with her. Something about Terrence Malick, though, in terms of the way his stuff feels, because they have some background information about it that makes it make more sense. He did go to the American Film Institute. I mean, he classically trained. But before that, he taught philosophy in France for 15 years.
Wow.
So, I mean, if you think about that, you know, what would somebody who's a ex-philosophy teacher, you know, suddenly they go to film school, what kind of movie? They're going to end up, being Terrence Malick.
Yeah, he's a very there's always a few directors like a Kubrick who always have this mysterious aura about them. Like Kubrick was, even though this has been proven completely false, he was this recluse. You know, he only came out to do movies. You know, but you know he also had a lot of families, and a lot of people said that's bull. But like with Malick, he kind of does have that mysteriousness about him. Like this was a guy that did two movies in the 70s, and then for like 20 years didn't make a movie. And then, like, but I guess he hardly does any interviews. You don't see a lot of pictures of him. He just kind of shows up, does this movie, stops, waits a few years, does another movie. And he's just, you don't really know a lot about him. He's not like a guy that's in the spotlight a lot.
Yeah, that's actually part of his contract, that no one can take pictures of him on set or show any current photographs of him. He really likes being, you know, the guy behind the scenes. And he also was a journalist for Newsweek, Life, and The New Yorker. So think about that when you think about how many things look like Encyclopedia Britannica shots. And also, he's an avid bird watcher. So there's your tweeting birds and the nature scenes.
Nature porn, as I call it.
Yeah, he comes by all of that stuff, honestly.
I will say this about Malick, and this may sound like a bit of an insult, but I really don't mean it as an insult. I think his best job, where he would be best suited, would be to work with National Geographic or BBC Planet Earth shows or miniseries.
Anything on Animal Planet.
Yeah. I think he would get us beautiful shots, because a lot of the shots in Planet Earth, like I just watched recently one where they talked about the American West and all the animals and wildlife there, and that was beautiful to look at. He would do great. And actually, I'm looking at his IMDb, just 2 years ago in 16, he did a something about talking about the universe and creating the universe and the globe and everything. He does all these shots of, you know, the universe and the earth and, you know, nature. And I'm like, that is perfect for him. Like, that is like, that is right. And it got great reviews from what I'm hearing. I haven't seen it yet, but it's gotten great reviews. I think that is what you're probably best at. Movies that are supposed to tell a story and have characters and understand who they are and what their background is, maybe not so much, at least with this film.
Actually, I think, To the Wonder feels like an earlier movie where Tree of Life should be where he is now. But To the Wonder is that the first film he's done in present day. Yeah, everything else has been the past, like the 50s and Tree of Life, or I think it's 59 for Badlands.
I know he's, because he's done a couple of films since. Like he said, he did that universe thing, but he also did a...
That universe thing. Yeah, see, that's what they should even call it. Yeah. Terrence Malick presents that universe thing.
I think he also did a film called Night of Cups that had Christian Bale in it. I think that was set in the modern, and there was one that just came out last year, was called Song to Song. Had a Ryan Gosling and Kate Mara. I think that's supposed to be set. I haven't seen them, but
you know, Christian Bale was supposed to be the lead in To the Wonder, and then he dropped out, and they got Ben Affleck.
Yeah, and that's one of my biggest complaints with this movie. The Ben Affleck, his character, there's nothing. I was reading somewhere where it's supposedly that he was this guy who was supposed to be this aspiring author, and he's had all this backstory. I get none of that in the movie.
Yeah, me either.
He has like maybe two lines of dialogue. I don't even think he gets to does the whispering narration in the movie.
He doesn't even get to whisper, man.
He could have just replaced. I could have been in that film and it wouldn't have changed anything. Like, his character is almost pointless. And yet he's supposed to be the main character. Like, there's this whole part where he's like a environmental inspector, a mm-hmm. safety inspector. And there's a couple of scenes when he's in a town or the town he's living in where there's some sort of problem, but that's never really... But enough of that. Let's get back to them running around the fields.
Right. Let's take a little soil sample, and then let's forget about that completely.
Yeah,
I don't buy him as an environmentalist or whatever he's supposed to be in the movie. In fact, I think he's actually the weakest link in the movie.
Definitely. And it seems... This is the problem with the movie overall. It seems like it's really relying too much on atmosphere and not at all on telling a story, like... Who are these people? How long have they known? Like, another thing that was brought up, but supposedly from the time he takes Olga Korolenko back to America to live with him, the time she breaks up with him, it's supposed to, her visa expires, it's supposed to have been like 5 years. It could have, like, the movie, like, it seemed like it was like 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no really time. And once again, it's just like, you could have told a little bit of the story and cut out, which this is the biggest complaint I have, and you can see it on my paper. I have it not only in caps, but in underline. How many continuous shots of Olga Korolenko and Ben Affleck like running through the fields, you know, you know, it's, remember that scene in Gladiator when he's like flashing back to his home with his wife and he's like brushing his hands against the grains.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, that's like 90% of this movie. Just them frolicking around in fields, brushing their hands against grains. It's either, if it's not her, it's, Rachel McAdams, he's doing it with Rachel McAdams, and it just like, you know, you could have cut, did you need all of that? Could you just total, you know, could you cut out a couple of those scenes and, you know, give us a little bit of the backstory that Affleck wants to be a writer, maybe something a little bit more about his, you know, him being a safety inspector, what's going on with this town, are the people sick, what's all this hubbub about? We could have gotten more of that, you know, just give us something to the story, but did you need all of those scenes?
Yeah, I definitely know what you're saying. I think what fell down for me the most was, you know, they put so much into the falling in love and running through the mm-hmm. fields and all of that. But they come back to the United States. They never formalize their relationship. So the day that her visa expires, like, comes out of the blue. Like, you didn't see this coming? And mm-hmm. how come you guys didn't get married back when you were happy? It's like he acts like, well, what did you expect? It's like, wait a minute, weren't you frolicking in the field? Yeah.
I thought they were married, and she was like, but like, yeah, then I heard like he was seeing her, he was married to somebody else that maybe it's like Rachel Weisz or Jessica Chastain he mm-hmm. was married to, but we don't see it all in the movie, that were completely cut out. Like, because again, it feels like a lot of this film has been cut.
Yeah, it does have that feel. And I do wonder about that.
No pun intended.
You mentioned that, yeah, Jessica Chastain actually plays an ex-girlfriend of Ben Affleck's character before they cut her out of it. Yeah, who knows how much that would have, like, brought coherence mm-hmm. to motivation. Because when he turns on her, it's like he acts like he never even liked her. It's a strange character arc. Now, the Rachel McAdams character, she has said... She doesn't know for sure that she really exists in the movie, that she may just be a figment of his imagination. But couldn't everything in a Terrence Malick movie be a figment of somebody's imagination?
Yeah, because it is that whole interlude with Rachel McAdams is strange, because it's the, you know, all of a sudden she leaves, and then he just happens to run into this, you know, this old high school girlfriend, I'm supposing. And then, you know, it seems that, you know, he runs around with her in the fields. And then, like, we get a little bit of the story how her, like, she works on a farm or a horse ranch or something. And I'm assuming she's having financial problems,
mm-hmm.
which, once again, you can only assume because he gives you just very little about it and never dives into it. And once again, like, she's, you know, when Olga Korolenko comes back for some reason, then he decides to go back to her. And then Rachel McAdams is gone and never brought up again in the movie.
Yeah. Although, you know, having her be like the small town girl that he falls in love with or used to or whatever really just evoked The Notebook for me.
Yeah, and it is Rachel McAdams. And
but that same role, you know, the small town girl, the should I go with this guy or the guy that I really know I should be with, that whole, you know, story. Let's talk about actually the most wasted character of all, which is Javier Bardem as this seeking priest who is having a crisis of faith.
Yeah, and actually, like if they made him the focal point of the movie and it's just about him. I know Terrence Malick film, especially Tree of Life, he's always have to have like some sort of, you know, religious subtext to it. I thought if you've made more on that, that would be a much more interesting story. Just this priest who he's having, once again, the whispering narration, how he's he's saying like to God, you know, I've been wanting to feel your presence and I've been looking for it everywhere and I don't feel it. And he's sort, you know, once again, having the crisis of faith. And I believe sort of at the end, we see him tending to the impoverished, the poor, people who are sick. He goes to like senior citizen homes. He goes to prisons to speak to prisoners. It seems like I believe at the end, he's finally found the meaning. God's finally speaking to him. Like, you know, that's a good movie. Like that could be something interesting. Mm-hmm. But he just kind of comes in a few scenes and comes out. Doesn't really have that much of an influence on Ben Affleck and Olga Haralinko. He's just a side story, and he does have a payoff, I guess. But I was like, you know, maybe if he was the main focus, that would have been a better movie.
You know, I'd like to see a movie of all the stuff that Terrence Malick cut out, because there's probably some good stuff in there.
I'd love to have seen a director's cut. Maybe it's like a movie that's saved as a director's cut.
Maybe, but that's going to be like 6 hours long. Yeah. The Javier Bardem character, though, sort of reminded me of The Seventh Seal, where Max von Sydow was, you know, beseeching God, why can't I know that you're there? I mean, that's, again, one of those essential, time-honored stories. But again, I felt like, why is this in here? Except as a nod to, because you got to check off all those boxes. You know, you have to say something sort of mystical, sort of spiritual, sort of, to, you know, acknowledge that we're all lost, we're all seeking. No one knows, even the people trying very hard and doing all the right things. But that kind of makes him a stock character instead of, you know, cornerstone.
Yeah. Once again, there's no meat in this movie. The characters are just paper thin. You know, Ben Affleck, he says like two lines of dialogue. Like you said, I could have been in the movie and it really wouldn't have been any different. Even Olga Karolinko, she's not really that much interesting of a character. I mean, like I said, half the time she's just running around. Ah, I'm so carefree. Can't you tell we're in love?
But you know, she would have been a more interesting character if they focused on whatever it was that was her sort of mental breakdown. I mean, was she crazy?
Yeah, or even the daughter, because they show a couple of scenes with the daughter. You know, she's French. She's sort of having trouble communicating in school. There's a couple of scenes when she's with other girls her age, and she's just having this, communications breakdown with them. You know, once again, that's something you could have focused on. There are things there you could have done, but he's just focusing too much on the atmosphere, too much on, you know, this, you know, like you said, making this feel more dreamlike than actual reality. And it just, I don't know, it just, I didn't like it.
At least you didn't hate it as much as Wonder Wheel.
No, definitely not as bad as Wonder Wheel. And one of the things I do want to compliment the film, besides the cinematography, I do really like the score by Hanan Townsend. And he also worked with Terrence Malick on Tree of Life, and I think he's worked with him in his later films. And I think the work he does in this film is really good. It really matches well with, once again, the cinematography, where it does, you know, it kind of really gives you this feeling of, you know, overwhelming beauty.
An atmosphere.
Atmosphere, yes.
Yeah, and you have to admit, Terrence Malick movies have plenty of atmosphere. In fact, if you just turned the whispering down altogether, then you'd have the Scenery Channel.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And he does great Scenery Channel.
Yeah, it's Screensaver the movie. You know?
Hey, that's a good one. All right, here's something that he said about why he doesn't work with storyboards, which again, tells us a little bit about his frame of mind when he's shooting. He says, if you try to make things happen, they start to feel presented. The action has been premeditated. It starts to feel like theater, which is wonderful in its own right, but you don't want the movies to be like theater. Well, I kind of think maybe I do like them to be more like theater. I like
theater.
Expositional dialogue and three distinct acts, a beginning, middle, and an end.
You know, it's funny because I remember when we were talking about Wonder Wheel, one of the biggest complaint I have with that movie is the fact that it just, there's way too much exposition. It's like, it doesn't feel like a movie. It feels like a play. It just feels like, here's my backstory. And I'm going to tell you blah, 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 blah. I'm going to tell you exactly what I'm thinking. I'm telling you exactly what I'm going through, my emotions right now. This movie, it's almost like the exact opposite. We're not going to give you anything about these characters. You're not going to, you know, we'll just give you slight tidbits and not go into them at all. There's not going to be any conversation or dialogue. It's interesting. Both films I don't like, but I would say I do enjoy this one more, but it's still like the anti-Wonder Wheel. It's like one, it's like polar opposites, but neither work.
You know, every time we say Wonder Wheel, I think about the old, the toy. I don't know if you ever saw that Richard Pryor movie. Mm-mm. But there's this giant Wonder Wheel that you get in, and of course he has to get in it. That's actually the best part of the movie.
Which movie?
The Toy.
Oh, The Toy. Okay, I haven't seen that. It does seem like, since we're sticking a lot about on Terrence Malick, you know, he's, like we said, he's this guy that's built up, you know, he's has this mysterious aura around him. So, for those who don't know, he did his first film was in 1973. It was Badlands with Martin Sheen and Spacek. It was very, just kind of a, like a Bonnie and Clyde kind of mm-hmm. movie. He's a young, you know, criminal. She goes on the run with him, go on a killing spree, that kind of thing. Really good movie. And then he waited like 6 years, and then 79 he did Days of Heaven, which is also a really good movie. Once again, both those films incredibly shot. And then he takes like 20 years off to do The Thin Red Line. And this was this big thing, and The Thin Red Line, like everybody's in that movie, like Travolta, Nick Nolte, mm-hmm. Cusack, blah, blah, blah. George Clooney even has a cameo for like 2 seconds. Whole bunch of people. And then he takes like 6 years off and does that New World movie. It had like Christopher Plummer and Colin Farrell. And then he does Tree of Life 7 years later. And then just 2 years after, like not even a year after Tree of Life, he does this movie. And I notice now he's becoming more frequent. Like after 2012, he did that Knight of Cups movie in 2014. Then he did that universe thing in 2016. And then last year he came out with the Song to Song. It almost seems like maybe you were better when you were waiting like, you know, 7 to 20 years in between movies, that like you had time. Like Kubrick always was notorious for taking forever to make a movie. Maybe you do need to take that time to make a movie instead of, I need to pump one out every 2-3 years.
I don't know if he's on some sort of contract, but he's actually at the point in his life where he's making movies about his life, because The Tree of Life is about his own life experiences. And Malick, like Ben Affleck's character, had a romance with a woman in France mm-hmm. in the 80s and married her and moved back to Texas with her. And then they got divorced. And he, you know, reconnected with his former high school sweetheart. So he's mining his own experiences to tell mm-hmm. stories as a, you know, seasoned director. And they all do that. Everybody yeah. does that.
It's kind of like every director, I think, and it goes through the sensible old man or old woman phase when they're like in their 70s or 80s, and it's all their films are, I'm going to look back at the things mm-hmm. I've done in life. Like even Wonder Wheel was kind of like that for Woody Allen, because yes. he said he was
right.
like he was raised
up in Coney Island. Yeah.
This, like you said, this movie with Terrence Malick, and even like Kurosawa late in his life, like mm-hmm. Dreams, like that kind of had a, let me look back at all the things I've done in my life. And I've never been the hugest fan of the sentimental old man movies where they're like, let me look back at my life. Like, look at Scorsese. He doesn't do sentimental old man movies. He does films that he wants to do. Like, I'm going to do a movie about, you know, Jesuit priests and going to Japan in like the
right.
1600s.
Or Hugo.
Or I'm going to, you know, do another gangster, Wolf of Wall Street. Or I'm going to do this epic gangster movie coming up with bringing De Niro and all the gang back.
And then I'll do Shutter Island.
Yeah, he does what he wants. Like, you don't... Just because you're old doesn't mean you have to make all these sentimental movies where you look back at the things in your life. You can still just go ahead, like, you know, Scorsese, like I said, he doesn't do that, and he's 75, 76.
But where Scorsese has fans, Malick has disciples. I mean, he has, you know, rabid fans. So for those people, you do want to see him, you know, talk about his early life, because you want to know everything he has to say.
Yeah, and I don't hate Terrence Malick. I don't even, like I said, I don't even hate this movie. I don't like it, but it's like, I didn't really care for it. It's more or less like, oh God, it was awful. And I do really like Badlands and Days of Heaven. I even kind of like Thin Red Line, Tree of Life. So it's not like I hate his movies, and I can you can see the impact he's had on other filmmakers making these poetic movies and that really like to take their time, that don't, you know, get bogged down in like exposition or storytelling. You know, we remember when we talked about the assassination Jesse mm-hmm. James, that's very kind of Terrence Malick-ish. And it was funny, Terrence Malick said the movie, when he said he saw that movie, and he said it was too boring.
That's because people are talking and explaining what they're doing. And
there's not enough running through fields.
Well, and they probably storyboarded it to make it coherent. Why would anybody do these things? Apparently, when he did The New World, with Christopher Plummer in it, and Christopher Plummer was in his 70s, he made him climb some tall tree a couple of times for some shot he wanted. So poor Christopher Plummer, you know, did.
Yeah.
And then he cut the scene. So he has a whole lot of ideas. He's distilling them down into what he thinks is a, you know, a cogent story. But I think the whole point of Terrence Malick is that they're dreamlike. It's like something you wake up and you think, I should write that down, but you can't really describe it.
Yeah. And I do feel sorry, like you said, like that whole scene where poor old Christopher Plummer had to do that like laborious scene and got cut. I do feel bad for the actors or actresses. Like you said, Rachel, I mean, that's the thing. A lot of the reason why he gets these big name people, like look at Thin Red Line. Like I said, everybody's in that movie. A lot of people want to work with Malick. And like, that would probably piss me off if I really wanted to work with him. He gave me a spot in his movie, even if it's just a small scene. And then it's cut. Mm-hmm. So I do feel bad for Rachel Weisz in this movie, who doesn't have a scene in it. I do feel bad, even though she was in Tree of Life, but Jessica Chastain, who doesn't have a scene in this movie. It's like these people want to work with you, and they take time out of their schedule to do a scene with you just so they can say they worked with you. And you don't even let their scene in the movie. So I'm not sure if I would want to work with them. It's like, am I really going to be in this film? Or are you going to cut my scene out?
Well, that's what Olga Kurylenko said. You know, she made him put it in writing that she wouldn't be cut out of the movie. I mean, she's like one of the leads.
She's the main character. But hey, you know what? You never know. So, for those who don't know, this is part of the Wonder series. So we've been talking about earlier when we talked about, you know, we'd had the Wonder Woman, Professor Marston in the Wonder Woman, and then last week we had Wonder Wheel. So tell us some more about the series that will be coming up, I believe you said, in February?
The series starts actually in the fall. This is for the Horowitz Center, and the theme is Wonder. So we chose a lot of movies with Wonder in it, and also topics that have to do with Wonder, like The Shape of Water. So there's everything in there from, you know, Woody Allen's Wonder Wheel to Stevie Wonder live in concert.
Okay. And so getting close to the end of my questions here, is there anything else about Terrence Malick or To the Wonder, anything else that you want to bring up?
Well, this was the last movie that Roger Ebert reviewed before he died. And, you know,
He
really liked it. But see, I think this is the kind of movie, especially for Robert Ebert, he probably chose for this to be the last movie he watched before he died, because it has all those big ideas and the, you know, reflections on life and the road not taken, and why didn't I spend more time frolicking on that beach and you know, running my hand against more corn. It has all of that, you know, kind of looking back on a life well lived or a misspent youth, both. So I think that's, you know, poetic.
Yeah, well, you know what a good movie like that is, where you're looking back on your life and trying to make amends? Ikiru.
Like, yes.
Yeah, because that movie has a story. It gives that character a ton of backstory. It's not overwrought with exposition, but it gives you enough details about where he is in his life. So, yeah. But anyway.
Sorry. We should do that one at some point.
I already did that with Giuliano. But
oh, I bet he had a lot to say.
Yeah.
Oh,
that was
He would probably have a lot to say about this movie,
too. Yeah, he likes Terrence Malick, doesn't he? So maybe he's going to come in here and just tell me how I'm an idiot. This movie's very deep.
Mental midgets.
Yeah. Okay, then, so last question we'll have is just tell us a little bit about the classes you have coming up in the fall.
In the fall, I am teaching Intro to Film, American Cinema, World Cinema, and Film and Philosophy with Helen Mitchell.
Okay. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been talking about the 2012 film To the Wonder, directed by Terrence Malick. Don't forget, you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Thursday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com under the category Armchair Directors. Professor Westhaver, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
For the Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying, life's a dream. You can't make mistakes. And a dream.